A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on May 14, 1995, entitled Portraits in Flesh. The scripture readings are Genesis 1, verses 26 through 31, 2 Corinthians 3, verses 1 through 3, and John 11, verses 17 through 37. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 1, verse 26, and 2 Corinthians 3, verses 2 and 3. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Seems a long time ago now, but I remember it vividly. It was one of those moments in one's life that seemed to register indelibly upon one's being. I was, I suppose, already in training for ministry. I was a student, at least, in Holland, Michigan, and I walked past the church. And on the church was the traditional billboard, and on the billboard was the sermon subject for the coming Sunday. And when you're aiming at ministry and a life of preaching, I suppose you start very early to pick up ideas and always notice these kinds of things. And there was the subject for Sunday. It was entitled, Good People Have Good Children. And I sort of did what you just did. I thought, really? And then I began to think about all the parents who would sit there that morning with a sermon title like that and with their kids turning out lousy. And the only implication could be, I must be lousy because good parents have good children. I look at my kids, what does that say about me? I remember so vividly actually thinking about that. I didn't know at that time, it was before I had any children, so I didn't know at that time that it's tough enough having kids without having to carry all that load of guilt for how bad they turn out. But I thought about that. Good parents have good children. That was the bald affirmation, the declaration of the sermon subject for the coming Sunday. Maybe it was Sunday of Mother's Day. I don't know. But at any rate, I was stopped short for a moment because even then I knew some lousy parents who had some wonderful children. And I knew some wonderful parents who had some lousy children. And already then, I thought to myself, that just really doesn't wash. I think what I failed to realize that, well, I at the time even could have come up with a text for a sermon like that. Probably something from Proverbs. Train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. How many parents whose children have gotten into trouble haven't suffered under that verse? I mean, that kind of means if you did the right job, they'll be okay. If they're not okay, draw your own conclusion. So I knew there were texts, I knew there were statements in the scripture about that. But what I didn't realize is that the scripture, particularly where that particular text would come from, is a part of the wisdom tradition. The wisdom tradition was a tradition that distilled wisdom from the experience of living. And as a matter of fact, what we're dealing here with is kind of a generalized truth. And as a generalized truth, I guess we would have to say that probably is true. Good parents have good children. There's always that little space in there when the jury's out, you know. But they come around eventually. And I guess that the proverb of the scriptures is maybe saying no more than the old folk adage. The apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. And I guess from what we know about genetic programming and environmental impact, well, maybe it is true. Kind of a generalized observation on life. The children, as a matter of fact, reflect the parents. And whether we like it or not, moms and dads, what we see in our children is a mirror image of what they have picked up from us. So, on this Mother's Day, in which we at Christ Community take the occasion to celebrate the Christian family, I want to think with you for just a little bit about that matter of imaging from one generation to another. I read the passage from Genesis because it is the biblical claim and understanding that we as human persons reflect our divine parent, that the Creator created us in His own image. And so that as human people, with reason and with will and with a certain freedom to choose and a sense of responsibility and accountability, we are reflective of God. We think of God in personal terms. We think of God as a self-conscious center of being. And we have become likewise self-conscious centers of being. I become conscious of myself, and only thus can I become conscious of the other. And being conscious of the other, I can enter into relationship and into communion. So we have the uniqueness of the human person, which the biblical claim is stems from a reflection of that personhood of God. Just as kind of an aside, the fact that we reflect the divine image also looked at from a different angle, it should be recognized that our image of God is terribly important in shaping who we are, and makes a lot of difference what we think of God. That is a great determinant of the persons that we are and the way we in turn do our parenting. God as aloof, austere ruler of the universe, passionless, uninvolved, unengaged with us, or God as stern, demanding judge, or God as reflected in the story Jesus told of that loving Father in all vulnerability, waiting for the Son to come home, waiting, watching, weeping, finally embracing and restoring. Our image of God does shape us in our personality tremendously, and in turn determines the way we do our shaping. So the biblical writer says we're created in the image of God, and I'm saying as an aside, and our image of God so shapes us that it determines how we shape on down the line. But it's not only in the family, in terms of father, mother, son and daughter, the supposedly American ideal, but there are other human relationships, there are other human communities that are family for us. That's why I read the gospel story. It is Easter tide, of course, and it's a beautiful statement where Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. But more than that, here was Mary and Martha, two sisters, and their brother Lazarus, who formed a household. There are all different kinds of households in the world, and I'm always very aware on Mother's Day, as we celebrate our mothers as we should, and as we celebrate the family as we should, that there are a lot of different configurations for family. And so here was Mary and Martha and Lazarus. I don't know the circumstances of their home, but I know Lazarus had two sisters that loved him, and when he grew ill, he called for Jesus. They called for Jesus. I can identify with Lazarus a little bit. I didn't have two sisters. I had three sisters that loved me, and that is a burden. But there was also a family unit of a little different configuration. But then there's the family unit which we experience even this morning. We experience the faith family. And that's kind of an extended family and also a tremendously important shaping, supporting human organization. And it was that faith family that Paul spoke of in the epistle lesson. Paul was having a trouble with that Corinthian congregation. He had quite a long history of problems with that congregation that he founded in Corinth. He was the faith founder, the father of that congregation, so to speak, and his letters indicate that he had quite an ongoing conversation with them. And in this particular case, the third chapter of the second letter, we have him recognizing that maybe he's becoming rather defensive and maybe he is recommending himself, as it were. And so he says, do I need to recommend myself? No, I don't need even letters of recommendation. Some people had apparently come from the outside and had begun to undercut his apostolic authority and his teaching. And they probably offered letters maybe from James in Jerusalem or something. Paul said, I don't need to bring to you letters of recommendation. If you want to know who I am, if you want to know the theology I preach, if you want to know the ministry I carry out, just look at yourselves. Because you are letters, now written by Christ, but delivered by me. You want to know who I am? Look at yourselves, because you are the letters written by Christ, by the Spirit of God, in fleshly tablets of the heart. You are my letters of recommendation. And so there again we can see that not only God creating the human person in the divine image, not only parents bringing into the world children that reflect them and that are shaped by them, but in our larger faith family as well, there is this ongoing shaping. And we are shaped in an image for better or for worse. And I was thinking about Mother's Day, and I thought, maybe we ought to just chat a little bit about this whole business of how we determine and shape the image of our children and our children's children. Well, let me speak a little personally this morning, if I can. After all, it's Mother's Day. It's supposed to be a little maudlin, isn't it? Sometimes I sit with people who have questions about Christ Community Church and about raising their children here. And particularly I find that it's parents whose children have entered into those adolescent years. The adolescent years, someone has said, are the years when a son or a daughter descend into the depths of the earth and dwell there in the darkness. And they emerge on occasion to take sustenance, grunt, and return. It's a scary time. And being at this advanced age with all this experience behind me, I sometimes look at parents with all of their anxiety and their worry, and I just smile. And they say, but it's so difficult to raise children today. And I want to say, it's never been so easy to raise children. Ask God. Because you see, you spawn these centers of self-conscious being who are supposed to, if it all works right, go through a period of separation, finding their own personality and their own space and being able to stand over against, hopefully for good conversation, but sometimes also for good confrontation. So this has never been such an easy thing, but I sit with people and I get a sense today that there are a lot of you out there that are anxious, rather insecure, feeling inadequate. Well, I join the club. Who of us has ever had a graduate course in parenting? I mean, we get the reality before we know what in the world to do with it or about it. So sometimes I sense that there are those who say, how about the church making things simple, clear, black and white? How about the church reinforcing some moral code, taking strong moral stance on moral issues, so that our children will know clearly and definitely the way to go? Well, I hear that, and I understand that. And then I think about my own home, my own dear parents, gone now for a decade, whom I dearly love, dearly respect, and who made me what I am. I think about how differently they raised me from the way I raised my children. I had a safe, secure, protected environment, a very predictable life. There weren't any questions. There were clear answers. The answers came before the questions ever arose. And there were clear structures in place. And there were clear-cut patterns of behavior. And there was a clear-cut definition of what was right and what was wrong and what was true and what was false. That was my experience. And then my own kids came along and I found out that you never have the opportunity to raise your children in the same historical, cultural matrix in which you yourself grew up. You know what happened between the time you were a kid and the time you had kids? The world changes. That's not a modern invention either. That has always been with us. But it is not possible for a parent to replicate the circumstances and the situation of their own childhood and youth and growing up. Simply can't be done. There's new information. There are new ideas. There's a whole new social configuration. The economy has changed. The international affairs are different. On and on and on. So, I think how I was raised, how I raised my kids. And I realized that there was a vast difference between what my parents did to me and what I did to my kids. Sometimes I think I was born too soon. I'd like to try it the way my kids did it. But that, of course, is not an option. And so, I've got anxious parents sitting in front of me, and I think about that. And I sort of sense that what they would like me to do as a pastor and what they would like this congregation to do is to create a world, recreate a world that existed when I was coming through. It seemed a lot simpler and a lot clearer. And I realize it can't be done. Then I think of my own kids who grew up in this environment. And then I've got an ace up my sleeve. And I smile at these people and I say, don't worry. I said, I saw six of them come through this crazy community called Christ Community with its grace and its openness and its freedom. And you know what? They turned out just fine. And I want to say, as I think about that, that I am filled with humility and gratitude for children who have grown up loving God, loving the church, living in the faith, who have emotional and spiritual health and stability. My goodness, that's enough to fill one with humility and with great thanksgiving to God. For all is grace, right? But then I should probably admit, even though it's Mother's Day, that they're not perfect. I mean, can we talk? I mean, you want to hear about flaws? You want to hear about fallenness? They've followed in this parent's foot tracks real well. Mixed bags, but a wonderful bunch. But then from another angle, when I'm beginning to say, well, I was just different than my parents, I come back and I say, not really. Not really. The circumstances change and times change and things are a lot different. And so behaviors change and understandings change. But you know what? Underneath, who were my parents? They were people who lived according to the best knowledge and understanding they had. But you know what was really important? I can't remember everything they believed about everything, but I know this. They were true. They were real. They were authentic. And what they believed, they lived out. And they never asked of me what they didn't practice themselves. I saw in them a love of God. I saw in them a passion. I saw in them a devotion. I saw in them a commitment. I saw them living for a larger picture. I saw them delivered from self-centeredness and seeking their own pleasure and gain and giving their lives away. I saw in them those beautiful things that they never talked about, but which I sort of imbibed by osmosis. I saw passionate people living well. And then I say to myself, the things that are different, that's superficial surface stuff. But the real thing that comes through is the heart of the matter. And then I like to say to you parents who are in the thick of it right now, it's going to be just fine. Ah, they are your portraits in flesh. And they pick up all of the light and the shadow. They are our reincarnation. Let us not forget it. But in the meantime, enjoy the journey. And if you are living with authenticity and with passion and with commitment, and with joy, I'll tell you, they're dead ringers that follow in your step. But it's true as far as the extended family is concerned too. And I have one more illustration for you. As you know, I wrote you a letter about the fact that this congregation was visited officially by the Classis of Muskegon of the Reformed Church in America because a couple of years ago our consistory thought it was to follow the way of Jesus by extending hospitality to the Metropolitan Community Church. And we offered our chapel as a place where these people, who are composed largely of those whose sexual orientation is homosexual, we gave them space to worship God and to study together and to fellowship together. And so we got an official visit to investigate, quote, our ministry to homosexuals, quote. And so how are we going to prepare for a meeting like that? Well, in typical fashion of anything I lead, there's no preparation. The only thing we decided was that we would let the consistory speak. And so there we were gathered with the consistory, and we had a few other folk, some leadership people who were present. And there were four pastors in the room. And the chairman of the task force that came to visit us called Peter that day to say, "Well, I trust you and Dick will be at the front table." And Peter said, "I don't think Dick will be, and I don't plan to be." And I said, "No, this is their party." We had four pastors in that room who never opened their mouth that night. Miracle of miracles. Never said a word that night. I think that is quite remarkable. Number one, that we didn't say a word. But maybe even more so, that we as pastors trusted our people to carry the ball. They explained, they answered questions, explained who we were, gave our perspective, talked about grace in a most marvelous fashion. I sat back there like an old proud father. As I looked at the average age of those, our leadership, who were making response to the inquiries, they're a generation below me. And I thought to myself, the message has taken root. The children are speaking it on their own. And I'll tell you, if I'm humble and grateful about my own kids, I was proud of this community of faith that has people that can articulate out of their own being the heart and core of what this ministry is all about. Like Paul said, "You are my letters." When I sit with people, and I do on occasion, who confront me about my theological vision or about the nature of this community, I end up always by simply saying, "What kind of people are here? Who are you? Go anywhere. You'll find a more gracious, more open, more joyful conglomeration of funny people anywhere. I dare you. I challenge you. This, you are beautiful. You are wonderful. I love to claim you. And I'll stand before the judge of all the earth and say, test my theology, test my life, test my integrity, test my authenticity in terms of my people. I love you. I'm proud of you." Because you see, what are we after? After all, just like God took a risk when God created us and spun us off, giving us that awesome power to say no, just so with our children or with our faith children. What we're looking for are not puppets on a string, not some kind of mass mind, not some kind of group think. Looking for people, human beings, men and women, who live out of their own depths, whose life comes out of their own center, who have not had some external template forced on them, shooting them out like so many pieces out of a die, but people who have grown, who have developed, who have become human, who have searched, who have probed, who have thought, who have reflected, who have come to terms not with all the answers, but have honestly looked for the questions and in a pilgrimage of faith develop into more and more beautiful human beings. You see, Paul, if we had time to read the rest of 2 Corinthians 3rd chapter, you'd find that he says, "Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom." And he talks about how the Spirit of the Lord is shaping us in a process of transformation. He says, "As we behold him with unveiled face, we become shaped like him from one degree of glory to another. Paul is talking there about the transformative process of the human person who is growing with pain, growing with anguish, growing with delight and with joy, growing, shaping into the image of Jesus. And the image of Jesus with all the multifaceted wonder and beauty of that person, so that the diversity is a rich diversity, and that we, by the Spirit of God, are being molded into people who have all kinds of different opinions and all different kinds of stances on issues. So what? But who have a passion, who love God, who live before the face of God with passion, with enthusiasm, with joy. Isn't that what it's all about after all? People who grow up to be human persons, able to live out of their own center, called to maturity, you see. No longer children. No longer just sheep. Real people. A few weeks ago, a young woman came up to me in this place. I've known her since a little girl. She's a pretty little girl. I remember the passage when that little girl became a woman. I remember the day in her bridal gown she came down this aisle on the arm of her wonderful father. I've seen her at the baptismal font with her own beautiful children. The other day she came up to me and she said, "You know, I've been meaning to write you a letter. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for this place. Thank you for this place where I could grow up, where I could be nurtured, where I could learn the faith, and learn to decide and to discern, so that now at this stage in my life, I am able to make decisions and be responsible for my husband and to my husband and for my children. I've just been meaning to write to say thank you to Christ Community." Well, if I would have thought about today's sermon, I probably would have said to her, "Don't write. You are my letter. Portrait in flesh." So, dear friends, relax a bit. Love deeply. Commit yourself wholly. Let all around you know how deeply you care. And have some fun. And then trust God. It's going to be just fine.